You are listening to WGNS.
The monthly District Attorney Show, heard the first Friday of each month, exclusively on News Radio WGNS.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station.
This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host today, Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. And we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. On today's broadcast, in our Call to Conviction segment, we will profile another one of our super cases. It is the murder of Marjorie Ewing, a case that remained unsolved for over 28 years. Then, in our What's the Law segment, former District Attorney General Bill Weitzel will talk about the legal aspects of the Marjorie Ewing murder case. In our Cold Case Profile segment, we will interview Murfreesboro Detective James Abbott and Murfreesboro Public Information Officer Larry Flowers. And then, Assistant District Attorney General Trevor Lynch will take us all inside the courts. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
WGNS, Murfreesboro.
We are broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios. Search for the MTE app in Google Play or in the iTunes store today. MTE, since 1936.
We'll return to the show in just a second to find out what else has been happening within the courts. And we'll dive deeper into past court cases with your host, retired Assistant DA J. Paul Newman.
You feel great at Adams Place.
Melanie teaches all of our exercise classes. I do the stretch and balance.
Alan Butcher.
Avis is our water aerobics instructor. It's really helped me to overcome some of my arthritis pain, and it's just a wonderful thing that we have here.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adams Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
A search for truth.
I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere. You can hear my voice. I know I'll find you somehow, somewhere.
My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host, William C. Weitzel, Jr. We will review a case that involves one of the most bizarre and brutal murders in Rutherford County history. It is the murder of 24-year-old Marjorie Ewing. Marjorie Ewing was killed in December of 1980. To discuss that case will be Detective Sergeant Dan Goodwin of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. Also on today's broadcast, in the Look at the Law segment, General Weitzel will tell us about a very interesting aspect of the law and how it affected the Marjorie Ewing case.
From call to conviction, time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
On today's Call to Conviction segment, we will review the case involving the murder of 24-year-old Marjorie Spivey Ewing. A word of caution. This case contains facts that are brutal and bizarre. Listener discretion is advised. Marjorie Ewing had been married to Charles Ewing for 5 years when she disappeared. The couple had 2 children. Marjorie Ewing was last seen alive by her co-workers at the Crystal Restaurant on December 27, 1980. Her husband, Charles Ewing, told the police that he did not know where she was or what had happened to her. 3 months later, on March 23, 1981, a woman's skull and 3 vertebrae were discovered at the Stones River battlefield. The remains were sent to the University of Tennessee. There, they were examined by world-renowned forensic anthropologist Dr. William Bass. Through scientific identification techniques and dental records, the remains were identified to be those of Marjorie Ewing. Despite the efforts of law enforcement, no arrest was made, and the case went unresolved for over 2 decades. In 2007, the newly formed Rutherford County Sheriff's Office Cold Case Unit reopened the case. They re-interviewed witnesses. Some of those witnesses told the investigators that Charles Ewing had told them that he had killed his wife. Based on all the evidence, Charles Ewing was arrested on July the 8th, 2009. When interviewed by the detectives, Charles Ewing confessed to killing his wife. He told the detectives that he beheaded Marjorie Ewing and disposed of her body at various locations. The case of Charles Ewing moved quickly through the Rutherford County court system. 42 days after his arrest, on August 19, 2009, the case was over. Charles Ewing was represented by Rutherford County Assistant Public Defender Ray White. The state prosecution team consisted of District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. and Assistant District Attorney J. Paul Newman. The case was assigned to Division 3 of the Circuit Court for Rutherford County. The presiding judge was the Honorable Judge Don R. Ash. On August 19, 2009, Charles Ewing entered a plea of guilty to the murder of Marjorie Ewing. Under the plea agreement and the law that existed in 1980, Judge Ash sentenced Charles Ewing to 40 years to serve in the Tennessee State Prison. Charles Ewing was 23 years old when he murdered Marjorie Ewing. Almost 29 years later, at age 51, Charles Ewing entered his plea of guilty and faced his justice for the brutal and horrible murder of his wife. It was through the perseverance of dedicated law enforcement officers that the murder of Marjorie Ewing was not forgotten. The passage of time did not dampen their spirits as they sought to bring closure to the family and memory of Marjorie Ewing and justice to the man who killed her. We now welcome Detective Sergeant Dan Goodwin of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office to the microphones. Sergeant Goodwin, along with Detective Bill Sharp, were the 2 detectives who solved the murder of Marjorie Ewing. Sergeant Goodwin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became involved in law enforcement and how the Cold Case Unit was formed?
I became bored with working at the local newspaper and decided to pursue an idea I'd had for a long time back in 92 to become a police officer and eventually made it into the detective division.
Can you tell us how the Cold Case Unit was formed, who came up with the idea, and how it was developed?
Well, after the successful prosecution of Kyle Gilley in 2006, plans began to create a specialized unit to investigate unsolved homicides.
Specifically, can you tell us how it was that after over 25 years, this case was reopened?
We looked at all of the cases for solvability. After we made our first arrest in 2008, we turned our focus to Charles and Marjorie Ewing's case because it appeared to be highly solvable.
Tell us a little bit about the victim in this case, Marjorie Spivey Ewing.
Everyone that remembers her family and friends said she was a kind, cheery woman, worked very hard to keep her children clean and clothed properly, took care of them, was working just about full-time at the Crystal's restaurant that used to be down on Northwest Broad. She was a good mother to her children.
The Ewings had 2 children at the time of the murder. What were their ages?
Their son was 4 and their daughter was 2.
And I know you worked very closely with Marjorie Ewing's friends and family. How helpful were they in helping you solve the case?
Well, very much so. We found out, for instance, it was never Charles who reported her missing. It was one of her sisters who lived up near the Kentucky border, reported her missing at first. Unfortunately, Murfreesboro Police no longer had that report, but they were already looking for her right after she went missing, thanks to their family.
There is irony in this case in that Charles Ewing was a witness in the Moses Bess murder trial. How did he know Moses Bess? And why was he called as a witness?
He and his new wife, after Marjorie disappeared, he married a 16-year-old girl, moved out to Richland Road in the middle of 1982 and was just two doors down from Moses Bess and spent years telling him how easy it was to get away with murdering your wife.
In looking at the Charles Ewing case and the Moses Bess trial, I noticed there are some very eerie similarities. Share with the audience some of those similarities.
Well, for one thing, it took right at 29 years for both of them to come to justice. Charles killed her at the end of 80, and he pleaded guilty in the fall of 19, or the late summer of 2009. And Moses killed Deborah Bess in August of 1986, and we convicted him of first-degree murder. And it's coming up on 29 years since Deborah was slain, too. They both killed their wives. Both of those ladies were working hard as waitresses to support their husbands and their kids. They both had two small children with those ladies at the time of the murder. And they had, as part of their motive was, they both had much younger girlfriends they were wanting to upgrade to as wives or companions. And they were living at the same time on Richland Road. And now they're both going to live behind bars for a very long time.
Now, you may have already touched on it just a little bit, but what did you determine was the motive or one of the motives for why Charles Ewing killed his wife?
He didn't want to go through a divorce with her. He had met this girl just 3 weeks before he killed Marjorie and become smitten with her. And he wanted to switch from a 24-year-old wife that had had two children and go with a much younger girl. And that's exactly what he did.
In this case, I know that you worked with Dr. Bass from UT Knoxville. Tell us what it's like to work with him, being around a forensic scientist who is so impressive and has done so much.
For all that, he is a very personable man, very knowledgeable, but he's a lot of fun. He's a hoot to hang out with, and he worked on a number of cases that we had from back in the 80s.
Now, in this case, Charles Ewing ultimately received a 40-year sentence. In your opinion, does the punishment fit the crime?
Yes, it does. He stole their children's mother from them forever, left the family in doubt. The skull was found actually a couple of weeks after he got married that next March. It took over 4 months to positively identify her. Those kids grew up without their mother, and their family never knew for sure what had happened until this case was solved.
Sergeant Goodwin, we want to congratulate you and Detective Bill Sharp for solving this cold case murder. We also want to congratulate the other members of both the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office who have worked on this case, as well as the scientists who worked on it. Success in cold case prosecutions involves teamwork and perseverance and patience. Murderers believe that the passage of time makes their case harder to solve. This case shows us that diligence and training law enforcement can put time on our side and a killer in prison.
What's the law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Morning, Paul. I'm glad to be here. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that there was some real good police work initially in the Ewing case that laid a foundation for success. It took a long time to bring Mr. Ewing to justice, but the things that were done early on in that case allowed us to be successful later. And I specifically remember when Miss Ewing's skull was found in the Stones River battlefield. And of course, Sergeant Goodwin mentioned that it was a missing persons case in the city of Murfreesboro initially was involved, but then when her skull was found, it transferred to the sheriff's department. I remember David Grisham and Virgil Gammon working on the case, and you mentioned Dr. Bass, and he wanted to go to the exact location where Miss Ewing's head had been found, and his purpose was to dig around to see if he could find any more bone fragments or possibly any jewelry that would help identify her. And then after he took her remains back to the University of Tennessee, they were able to do a facial reconstruction, using a picture also, and put her hair on that reconstruction, and that helped ultimately in the identification. That gave them a direction to go, and as you mentioned, dental records and other techniques were used. So we had that foundation. We knew who she was. We knew she's missing under unusual circumstances. She didn't even pick up her last paycheck, and that allowed us to go forward. And as you pointed out, you and Sergeant Goodwin, it was very important to show the type of mother she was, the fact that she was working, trying to get money to support her family and away from him, divorce him. And I believe it had an impact on the jury. I don't believe it was prejudicial at all. I believe it was highly probative. So that's had an effect. And after we got the guilty verdict, and you and I both know, and Sergeant Goodwin was in that case, that's a great feeling. To bring a case, especially a cold case, to a conclusion, a successful conclusion. And as you pointed out, two people who committed incredibly heinous crimes were brought to justice. And the irony and the parallel circumstances of both of these cases. And it took not only the efforts of law enforcement then, but then Sergeant Goodwin and Sharp and the cold case unit and the other detectives at the sheriff's departments to bring these cases to a successful conclusion.
For Bill Weitzel, this is Paul Newman.
Hi, this is Peter Demas. One of the things that we've done years ago is we've been able to do our orders, like our pastas and many other items, that we used to be able to put them in large pans. And now we have a catering team that will even deliver it to your home. We can drop it off for you, set it up, or they can come in and pick it up. Look up our catering menu on www.demasrestaurants.com. This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant, 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. We are excited to announce that here at Animal City, we are now a dealer for Ruffland crash-tested dog kennels. Just like you protect your child with a car seat, show your pet the same love with a Ruffland crash-tested kennel. We are happy to keep a variety of sizes, styles, and colors in stock. Animal City. You'll find us at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro.
In our cold case profile segment, I have two very special guests. First, we will welcome Detective James Abbott from the Murfreesboro Police Department. And we will also welcome the public information officer for the Murfreesboro Police Department, Larry Flowers. Larry Flowers will not only highlight his duties, but he will share with us the many innovations that the Murfreesboro Police Department has made in asking for the public's help in solving unsolved homicides.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice.
We welcome Detective James Abbott to our microphones. Share with the audience your training, education, and your work experience.
Good morning. My training experience, I've had numerous courses in training in homicide investigations, cold case homicide, murder investigations, interview, interrogation, and courses, search and seizure, crime analysis. I also have a bachelor's and a master's from Middle Tennessee State University. I'm currently working on my doctorate at University of Tennessee in Chattanooga. Recently completed my coursework, now working on my dissertation there. That's pretty much the extent of my experience. I'm always training. This job is one of those where you're always training.
I want to ask you a few questions designed to enlighten the public regarding what is often referred to as cold case investigations. And I know that you have investigated and solved numerous homicides and have testified many times in court. In your training and experience, what category or type of evidence is the most powerful in helping to solve homicides?
One of the most powerful ones is witness statements. If we have witnesses, that's excellent for our investigation. But to be honest with you, it takes a combination of things, particularly to get to a successful prosecution. Fingerprints, blood evidence, as far as DNA, trace evidence, weapons, you know, being able to identify the specific weapon, phone evidence records, text messages, emails, and even social media is now huge for our investigations.
Research shows that homicides are most often solved because somebody tells you something, and that witness statements are the most important type of evidence for solving a homicide. Do you agree with that research? And can you share with us an example of witness statements solving a homicide?
It's very true. Matter of fact, one particular case you and I both worked on, which was the Ellis Wayne Smith homicide. You may remember we had numerous people coming forward saying that they had information about the case, and there was information that we had withheld about the investigation because all these people were giving us all this information, coming forward and telling us, but it was all false information. They were looking for maybe a break in the court system themselves or things. So by withholding that key information, when we actually did have two individuals that had spoken to the suspect and the suspect had actually told them what happened, when they came forward, it opened up the entire investigation and, of course, led to successful prosecution of the individual himself.
Keeping in mind the importance of witness statements, what factors are helpful in obtaining witness cooperation, in your opinion?
Some of the biggest factors for us is, number one, you have to build rapport and sometimes, in some cases, earn respect with the witness themselves. A lot of it comes down to likability. There's some people that will walk into an interview room and it's like flipping on a light switch. No one wants to talk to them. At the other times, there's others that will sit down, become very personal with that person, and they'll get them to talk. And also it comes down to getting information out there to the community. A lot of times community members may hear someone talk about a case and they're kind of limited on, well, who would they need to talk to? But if you get out there and you talk to people and get that information out there with the community, then they usually know who to talk to. So I always say, you know, you've got to hand out your business cards like a politician. Let everybody know who you are and get that information out there.
What do you believe is the most significant factor or factors for a homicide remaining unsolved?
Usually the most significant factors for us that I have found over the years is a lack of witnesses and a lack of physical evidence. Those are the two key ones that usually hamper our investigations the most.
Larry Flowers is the public information officer for the Murfreesboro Police Department. I have known Larry for many years. I first met Larry when he was a TV news reporter. Larry Flowers is a person of great integrity and professionalism. I was so impressed with Larry's great TV skills. He was a one-man show. He could run the camera, do the interview, and edit the tapes. We welcome Larry Flowers to our WGNS microphones. Welcome, Larry.
Good morning, J. Paul. Do I pay you now or later?
Later will be fine.
Okay.
Larry, I know that you've appeared on this station before, but for those who may not be familiar with you, please tell us a little bit about yourself, your education, training, and your vocational history.
Sure. I'm what I'd like to recall a recovering TV journalist. Spent 33 years in radio and TV in Mississippi and Texas and, of course, in Nashville. I'm a graduate of the University of Southern Mississippi with a degree in broadcast journalism. Actually went to college with Brett Favre, so I'm telling my age there. So covered Steve McNair in college, so, and then covered him as a Titan, so.
Larry, can you tell us, does the Murfreesboro Police Department, do they have an unsolved homicide or what some people may call a cold case unit?
Around the PD, like to call them unsolved cases, because when you mention cold case to a victim's family, you know, that's kind of harsh. And they don't want to think of their loved one's case, you know, in a box in a property room. So we try to refer to them as unsolved cases. And basically, we want to make sure that these family members know we're in pursuit of solving their case, each and every one of them, even though some of the tips have stopped coming in, witnesses are not cooperating, or whatever the case may be. And we do feature those on our webpage. You know, simply go to MurfreesboroTN.gov /police and go under our department, and it has a link for those unsolved cases.
Can you tell us how Crime Stoppers works? How does it function?
Sure. Basically, people can report tips anonymously. The board offers up to a $1,000 reward for information that will lead to an arrest in a case. Not necessarily that they're going to get $1,000, but up to $1,000, depending on the person we're looking for. So that's typically how Crime Stoppers work.
One of the things about Crime Stoppers that often bothered me was that the amount has been $1,000 ever since I can remember. And one of the things that I looked into was, why is it $1,000? And what I found out was that the IRS had agreed that if the amount is $1,000 or less, then it is tax-free. So I encourage our legislatures to possibly get that law changed so that we can up that amount a little bit.
Exactly.
Would you agree with that?
I totally agree, because, you know, money talks. And if you offer a little more money, especially, you know, in today's times where inflation is through the roof, somebody may need that extra money just to pay a bill. So I would definitely encourage our lawmakers to consider that.
Tell us now about the P3 Global app and how the public can get that app.
Sure. Rutherford County Crime Stoppers has partnered with P3 Global Intel app. It's the next generation of crime fighting, as I like to call it. Citizens can report crime tips, submit videos in real time using that app for Crime Stoppers. And again, it's called the P3 Global Intel app. You can go to your Apple ISO or even your Android devices. Just go to the Google Play Store, download that particular app. You can report this anonymously. You don't have to even sign in your name on the app. You can literally click anonymously, and then, of course, the way Crime Stoppers work, you get a code, and that code you would use to typically collect your money. And so this P3 Global Intel app is just a modern way of reporting crime.
Special thanks to our two very special guests, Murfreesboro Police Department spokesman Larry Flowers and Murfreesboro Police Department Detective James Abbott. Thanks to both of you for your outstanding service to the community. This is Paul Newman.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. The friends you've made while banking right here over the years are still here, and so are those delicious, warm, homemade cookies. Everything you enjoyed about Capstar is still at Old National Bank.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Come on over and enjoy warm cookies with friends while doing your banking at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com. This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch, and today I will be your tour guide through this episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have not been convicted, and they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. I'll first start by telling you about several cases that have been resolved over the last several months. On September 21st of 2021, Erwin Odom's mother called 911 and reported that Erwin Odom had shot and killed his wife, Toni Odom. Detective Ty Downing of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department was assigned as lead investigator. At the conclusion of the investigation, Mr. Odom was charged with first-degree murder. On November 7th of 2022, a preliminary hearing was held, and the General Sessions Court found probable cause to bind the matter over to the grand jury. In December of 2022, the grand jury indicted Mr. Odom for first-degree murder. On November 8th of last year, Mr. Odom entered a plea of guilty to second-degree murder and received a 27-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Odom was represented by counsel, Mr. Josh Crane, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Sarah Davis and Dana Miner. On July 26 of 2020, deputies with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department responded to the residence of Mr. Eric Bixler. Upon arrival, deputies found the body of Mr. Bixler. Mr. Bixler had died as a result of multiple stab wounds. A female companion of Mr. Bixler advised deputies two armed men attacked Mr. Bixler and held her at gunpoint while they searched the premises. The female heard Mr. Bixler being tortured by the assailants. Detective Ty Downing was assigned as lead investigator. Following Detective Downing's investigation, Mr. Christopher White and Mr. Christopher Robinson, both from Kentucky, were charged with first-degree murder, especially aggravated kidnapping, especially aggravated robbery, aggravated burglary, use of a firearm during a dangerous felony, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, as to Mr. White, and tampering with evidence. After a preliminary hearing in the General Sessions Court, the cases were bound over to the grand jury. In March of 2021, the grand jury indicted both defendants as charged. A trial date was set for January 7th of this year. However, on December 20th of last year, Mr. Robinson entered pleas of guilty to second-degree murder, especially aggravated robbery, aggravated robbery, two counts of especially aggravated kidnapping, and aggravated burglary. He received a total sentence of 37 years to be served in Tennessee Department of Corrections. Then, the day of trial, Mr. White pled guilty to the same charges and received a 38-year sentence to serve. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Ashley Chisholm Hall and Trevor Lynch. Mr. Robinson was represented by counsels Mr. Brian Lewis and Mr. Robin McKinney, while Mr. White was represented by counsel Mr. Paul Bruno. On July 6th of 2022, deputies with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office responded to the residents on Panther Creek Road in response to a shooting. After receiving a 911 call, deputies discovered the body of Mr. Clarence Roden. Mr. Roden had been shot multiple times. Witnesses identified Mr. Jeffrey Burris as the shooter. Mr. Burris was located and found to be in possession of a firearm. Mr. Burris was taken into custody and interviewed by Detective Kyle Norod, and Detective Norod was assigned as lead investigator. Upon the conclusion of the investigation, Mr. Burris was charged with the first-degree murder of Mr. Roden. On December 8th of 2022, Mr. Burris appeared in the General Sessions Court of Rutherford County, and by agreement, his case was bound over to the grand jury. In March of last year, the grand jury indicted Mr. Burris for first-degree murder and employing a firearm during an offense. A trial was scheduled to begin on April 21st of this year. However, on December 13th of last year, Mr. Burris entered a plea of guilty to the charge of second-degree murder and received a sentence of 19 years to be served in the Tennessee Department of Corrections custody. Mr. Burris was represented by counsel Mr. Josh Crane, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. On February 27th of 2023, deputies with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office responded to a business on Halls Hill Pike in reference to an armed subject attacking and attempting to shoot several employees. The employees fought back and were able to subdue the subject, later identified as Eric Buchanan. Mr. Buchanan had recently been banned from entering the business a few hours earlier. Mr. Buchanan returned with a semi-automatic pistol, walked through the front door, immediately struck an employee in the head with the pistol, then pointed the pistol at the owner that had banned him and pulled the trigger. Fortunately, the firearm malfunctioned and did not fire, but audio and video surveillance equipment caught the entire incident on camera, and the audio caught the chilling sound of click when the trigger was pulled while the gun was pointed directly at the owner's head. At this moment, several individuals jumped in to physically restrain Mr. Buchanan until law enforcement arrived. Deputy Monica Fonseca was assigned as lead investigator. After interviewing witnesses and reviewing audio-video recordings, Mr. Buchanan was charged with attempted first-degree murder, aggravated assault, possession of a weapon by a felon, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. A preliminary hearing was held in the General Sessions Court on March 23rd of 2023, and the court found probable cause to bind the matter over to the grand jury. In May of 2023, the grand jury returned an indictment for all charges. A trial was held in October of last year, and on October 24th of 2024, a jury of his peers convicted Mr. Buchanan on all counts. On January 31st of this year, Circuit Court Judge Jimmy Turner sentenced Mr. Buchanan to a total effective sentence of 120 years to serve in the custody of Tennessee Department of Corrections as a career offender. Mr. Buchanan had at least 8 prior felony convictions, several for felony offenses. Mr. Buchanan was represented by counsel Ms. Jennifer Fiola, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland, and Will DeMint. Currently set for trial this year, there's a trial scheduled to begin February 20th of this year on Apollo Cantrell for allegations of first-degree murder, aggravated assault, reckless endangerment, employing a firearm during a dangerous felony, and possession of a handgun by a convicted felon. The state will be represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. David Clark. A trial is scheduled to begin March 10th of this year on Dontorius and Donsley Hamler for second-degree murder, 2 counts of attempted second-degree murder, 6 counts of aggravated assault, employing a firearm during an offense, and reckless endangerment. Mr. Hamler is represented by counsel Mr. Ben Wetzel, and Ms. Hamler is represented by counsel Ms. Jennifer Fiola. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. A trial is scheduled to begin April 28th of this year on Dante Martin on allegations of first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, 2 counts of aggravated assault, reckless endangerment, carrying a weapon on school property, employing a firearm during a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. Jacob Finley, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. Pending in our courts, State v. Corey Munsell Lillard Sr. On March 9th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired at a residence on East Vine Street in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered Mr. Davion Gates lying unresponsive in the driveway of a residence suffering from multiple gunshot wounds. Mr. Gates died from his injuries. Detective Justin Fugit of the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as lead investigator. Multiple persons lived in the residence, and officers learned that the 23-year-old gunshot victim was a romantic partner of one of these residents, a 41-year-old female. Also at the residence was 44-year-old Corey Munsell Lillard Sr. Mr. Lillard is the father of several of the female residents' children. Mr. Lillard was also staying at the residence at the time of the shooting. Detective Fugate interviewed multiple witnesses and were also able to view video jail calls between Mr. Lillard and one of his sons that was incarcerated at the Rutherford County Adult Detention Center. Mr. Lillard was on a video call with his son at the time of the shooting. From a review of this video, as well as evidence collected on scene, Mr. Lillard was charged with first-degree murder, maintaining a dwelling, possession of a Schedule II drug with intent, possession of drug paraphernalia, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. A preliminary hearing was held on June 18th of last year before a General Sessions Court, and probable cause was found to bind the matter over for presentment to a Rutherford County grand jury. In December of last year, the grand jury indicted Mr. Lillard for all charges. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. John Slager, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. This matter is scheduled for appearance in the Circuit Court on March 21st of this year. On April 23rd of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired on South Rutherford Boulevard in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered the body of Mr. Paul Howell on the roadway. Mr. Howell had been shot in his throat. Mr. Howell died as a result of his injury. Detective Andrew Stalnicker of the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as lead investigator. Also on scene was Mr. Brian Craig, a friend of Mr. Howell's. Mr. Craig had sustained a single gunshot wound to the arm. Witnesses to the shooting reported a road rage incident where Mr. Howell and Mr. Craig were nearly run off the road by an unknown driver. All parties came to a stop at a red light, and a verbal altercation led to shots being fired by the unknown driver. Almost 30 minutes after the incident was reported, Mr. Joseph Gann called 911 to report that he was the shooter. Mr. Gann was interviewed along with multiple witnesses. And at the conclusion of the initial investigation, Mr. Gann was charged with second-degree murder, attempted second-degree murder, and reckless endangerment. Mr. Gann is represented by counsel Mr. Josh Crane. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. This matter was bound over by agreement and awaits presentment to a Rutherford County grand jury. On May 15th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to 911 call of shots fired at a gas station on Joe B. Jackson in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Officers discovered the body of Mr. Davon Lortz. Mr. Lortz had been shot multiple times in the back and died from his injuries. Officers also located Mr. Eric Mitchell, the brother of Mr. Lortz. Mr. Mitchell had been shot once in the arm and beaten across the head, face, and body. Also on scene were Mr. Juan Charco and his brother. The altercation was captured on video surveillance. Detective William Pulleas was assigned as lead investigator. Upon conclusion of the investigation, officers discovered that Mr. Charcoal and his brother were in the process of illegally transporting a vehicle that was owned by Mr. Lovitz from Atlanta to Nashville, Tennessee, without Mr. Lovitz's knowledge or consent. Mr. Lovitz and his brother, Mr. Mitchell, confronted Mr. Charcoal and his brother and took the vehicle back at gunpoint. When Mr. Lovitz and Mr. Mitchell were attempting to drive away in their own vehicles, Mr. Charcoal retrieved a semi-automatic rifle and shot over 25 times at the two men. Mr. Charcoal was charged with second-degree murder and attempted second-degree murder. This matter was bound over by agreement, and a Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Charcoal for first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, aggravated assault, tampering with evidence, theft of property, reckless endangerment, and employing a firearm during commission of a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. Jeffrey Jackson, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. This matter is next scheduled to appear before a circuit court judge on February 19th of this year. And that concludes this episode of Inside the Courts.
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website.
As we end our program today, we thank our producer, Scott Walker. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my co-host, Trevor Lynch, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.